Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
March 23rd, 2019, and there's a lot to get into today. I recently covered the UN report claiming Israel responsible for numerous war crimes. Well, now the United Nations Human Rights Council, over which the United States nor Israel have veto power, which is a major factor for why the U.S. removed itself from the council, absurdly claiming an anti-Israeli bias, the United Nations Council has now adopted this report, endorsing it, and is openly accusing Israel of massive war crimes. The U.S. Congress has introduced yet another Israel-focused bill, and it's yet another AIPAC bill that was shot down in the previous Congress that is now being forced through again. All while during the time in which it took them to propose this bill for Israel twice, Americans are suffering. Flint still doesn't have clean water. Social programs are failing. Teachers are not being paid. Children are using textbooks from the 70s and are being forced to, you know, share pencils to cut costs. You know, but let's pass more bills for Israel. And guess what? This one has to do with direct energy weapons, which we've talked about before. And as I've been saying for some time, we're now officially down to only five companies that control over 90% of the media that you consume after another huge merger. But to begin today, and I was actually going to be beginning with some information about the Yellow Vest, which I will, but thanks to William Poole, who shared it in the chat just before I went live, there's some breaking information coming out of Syria. This one coming out of South Front was the first place I saw it after searching about another chemical attack that just took place. Now, this is important to cover. But still, obviously, this is just happening. So everything in this article and everything coming from anybody should be taken with a huge grain of salt, as there's so much propaganda from both sides, both U.S. powers, Western powers, and from Syria, coming out of these kind of topics. But based on our history of knowing for a fact, at least in Douma, that we've been lied to by the U.S. government, that they launched weapons on a sovereign nation because of these lies, we need to think about that in this context. Entitled Breaking: Militants attack residential areas in northern Hama with chemical weapons, casualties reported. Now, this is the second time, if this is indeed, you know, U.S.-backed rebels attacking government-held locations, as it seems, the second time this has happened in recent months that the U.S. and the media have failed to cover. This has happened recently that there was an attack using chemical weapons by U.S. rebels that no one ever addressed outside of independent media. So this will now be the second time. Now, in the late hours of today, apparently unknown militants launched several munitions containing toxic gases at the residential areas in the government-held towns of Al-Rasif and Al-Azia in the northern Hama countryside. Now, a medical source told the Syrian Arab news agency Sanaa that 21 civilians were intoxicated as a result of the chemical attack. The injured civilians are currently receiving medical treatment at the national hospital in a nearby town. Now, even per the United Nations past reports, this would not be the first time that U.S. rebels in years have used chemical weapons on the Syrian government forces, all the way dating back to 2016 and before, including the recent one that I just touched on that the media refused to cover. So this is nothing new, verifiably so. Now, the injured civilians, again, if this is legitimate, now the injured civilians are reportedly suffering from itching in their eyes and skin, as well as burns in their throats. The symptoms are identical to the side effects of chemical weapons, like mustard gas, like chlorine, for instance. Now, before, we had U.S. forces claiming this was happening, with doctors and civilians and witnesses there, and everybody else essentially claiming that it was smoke inhalation and hadn't happened, and this was the government forces of Syria saying that this didn't happen. Now we have the government forces of Syria saying this did happen. So just take that into consideration, and clearly the U.S. will likely either ignore it or claim that this was them doing it, and they're trying to claim it on rebel forces. Everything should be taken into question, definitely, but we cannot ignore the history that makes it clear who's been the liar in the past. Now, the Syrian authorities have collected samples from the attack, the site where the attack took place, and the injured civilians and sent them to Damascus for analysis, this coming from pro-government sources. Now, if the use of toxic gases is confirmed, this will be, as I said, the second time militants targeted government-held areas with these kind of weapons since the implementation of the Russian-Turkish agreement that has really never taken place. Now, last November, the city of Aleppo was targeted with shells containing chlorine gas that the media has yet to even cover. Now, Russian specialists will likely visit the attack site in the upcoming hours to conduct a thorough investigation, similar to what we've seen in previous attacks on Aleppo, which no doubt will be used as the excuse to say that, well, Russia went there immediately and changed everything and lied about everything. That's what the U.S. said last time, without absolutely any evidence whatsoever to prove those claims. So taking this into account, we will be following this story without doubt. Just like we've seen before, I can almost promise you this will be used as justification for more presence in Syria, more of the same, ongoing, and maybe, just maybe, as the Russians have been warning, this is why it was used and created to be able to make that claim, as the U.S. is floundering on its declaration to leave Syria, even though we've seen nothing actually change. In fact, more people on the ground in Syria since that declaration. So keeping this in mind, we will follow up on this story, but of course, we want to bring you the breaking news as we see it. Now, I was going to begin today with some videos from the Yellow Vests, because that's happening right now. And we recently talked about all of this leading up into this weekend, where the French government is now authorizing open fire on protesters if people are threatened. And of course, they've already shut down protests in certain areas, contradicting their own claims that demonstrations are allowed. It's only the radical people that are not, you know, as they shut them down before they even go live, which is ridiculous. But here is some footage from today so far that shows you some interesting things that I'd like to share. First of all, just showing you how big the protests are as the media continues to not tell you about it. I mean, how ridiculous is this? How this is a massive protest and they're not talking about it. And here is another video of how violent it is already. Peaceful protesters, verifiably so, protesting, standing still, and they get bum-rushed by police. And they're the ones that are being violent. Because they're there, understand. This is about the Yellow Vests, not about violent protesters. It's about Yellow Vests being shut down. They can't allow this. So they rush you with violence, and then when you react, they claim you're the one causing the violence. This has been going on for a very long time, and this is really nothing new. Here's a video, again, of police bum-rushing people standing around, milling around. As other videos have shown, the people that they're rushing were simply occupying a space they didn't want them to be in. Again, contradicting their absurd claims that demonstrations are protected. It's just the violent ones that we care about. This is about shutting down the global movement that is the Yellow Vests. Because they fear it. They're afraid of it. This is also why the mainstream media will never cover it, at least not honestly, and if in any real way. Covering superfluous parts of it. Oh, look at this building that was burned. How terrible. But not covering the fact that this is one of the largest protest movements in living memory. Worldwide Yellow Vest protests. Getting attacked by police on a regular basis. Here's another one showing you the age of provocateurs. Now, you can see Yellow Vest occasionally, one there, taking part. I've never claimed that there are no Yellow Vest people taking part in the violence, but we can see predominantly people all in black causing the problem. That is what we need to see. And they continue to try to hang this around all of the Yellow Vest protesters. There are people that get caught up in it, that just want to be a part of a violent act. There are people like that. But by and large, we're talking about people all in black and not wearing Yellow Vests that are causing the violence. Do you think that's coincidental? Do you think maybe this is agent provocateurs that we're talking about here? Maybe. Interesting to see. And of course, we have more. Oops, wrong video. I played that a little early there. But the point is, we have plenty of video from the ground in France right now, very clearly showing you that they're not being violent and they're being attacked regardless, contradicting their claims, as well as repeated examples of the very people that are not taking part in the actual demonstrations being the ones causing the violence. Regardless, it's being used to authorize live ammunition fire on peaceful protesters. And to shut it down altogether. Now, so far today, there has been an elderly woman that was taking part in peaceful protests that was severely injured when police, like you saw, bum-rushed them, all demonstrators, you know, just all together, for exercising their right to demonstrate, as they still claim is legitimate. And she's in critical condition right now for smacking her head on the concrete as they bum-rush these people. This is what's really going on today. And of course, they don't want you talking about this because it's taking place in a U.S. ally country. And similarly, something they'll also won't talk about, and I think is one of the largest stories today, this one coming from 21st Century Wire, and this is about the thing that we recently reported on, the UN report talking about potential war crimes. Well, guess what? That just went from potential to outright accusing Israel of war crimes, which is something new. We've seen this come to pass before, but to endorse this report and say now somebody needs to hold these people accountable is something positive to see happen. Ultimately, we know, sadly, But usually nothing will come of this because people step in to stop it, powerful people. But as the title reads, it's coming from Robert English from the reporting for Press TV and for 21st Century Wire, always does an excellent job. A lot of reporting comes from Palestine, entitled United Nations Human Rights Council Adopts Report Slamming Israeli War Crimes in Gaza. Now remember, this is first a report that went out from the United Nations giving all the information, and now it has been adopted. It has been endorsed by everyone in this council other than those trying, the few people that are blindly supporting Israel because they're being told to. Now, even according to Reuters, UN report found, quote, an apparent intentional use of unlawful, lethal, and other excessive force against the protesters. And all these, we're talking about Palestinians, occupied Palestinians, Gaza, West Bank. These people are being shut down violently, and now they're saying it is absolutely the fact. In a vote 23-8, the United Nations Human Rights Council voted just yesterday to adopt and endorse the report that we recently covered on Israel's treatment of protesters along the Gaza Strip, which determined that the government's actions amounted to war crimes against civilians in Gaza. Not may amount to war crimes or may be possible war crimes, but they have acknowledged that they amount to war crimes against civilians. Unequivocal. Now, the United States is going to ignore this, of course, so is Saudi Arabia and so are all their allies. But this is the vast majority of the world now standing up and saying they need to be held accountable. Now, this is either going to see something happen, which would be great, or it's going to pull the mask even farther off and show us that this stuff has no effect on the real ruling class of the world. Now, the report itself was published in late February, which, again, we've covered, and found that Israel intentionally shot both children and journalists, and I add doctors and medical personnel and countless others, in the Gaza Strip during these protests, the Great March of Return. Now, they noted that 154 out of 183 people killed in this time frame that they documented, there's plenty more than that, were unarmed. So just in this, they can prove that 154 people were shot unarmed. The report concluded that Israel had committed serious violations of international law. Simple fact, except that again, that their allies will just arbitrarily ignore. Now, Israeli officials insisted at the time the report came out in February that the killings amounted to, of course, right to self-defense and the obligation to defend its citizens and borders from children throwing rocks on the other side of an electrified fence in a bunker while they have sniper rifles and body armor. Of course, they're defending themselves as these rocks bounce off the fence and go nowhere. Yes, they have to defend themselves, as we literally just showed the video of the soldiers cheering as they shoot a child standing still. I mean, this stuff is all on record. You can watch my video from yesterday. It's all there. And they just simply say, we're defending ourselves, or blah, 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 Hamas. And it all is supposed to make sense. There's no explanation. There's no justification. There's no facts. It's just their rhetoric versus their crimes. And the U.S. supporting it. Now, Israeli officials now say the only supporters of this resolution are dictatorships and hypocrites. So everybody else, besides the only eight people that voted against it, every other country in the world in the United Nations that is all collectively, majority said this, are apparently, as Israel calls them, all dictators and hypocrites. Except that it's interesting how, I find it interesting that a dictator does not usually care about the lives of average civilians. Think about that. They're calling them dictators because they're caring about the rights of Palestinians. Oh my God, what authoritarian dictatorships. They're trying to rewrite the definitions of these words in real time, just like they're trying to rewrite rewrite history in real time. A dictatorship is somebody who does authoritarian things. They cracks down in oppressive, tyrannical ways, you know, such as Israel, such as Saudi Arabia, such as the United States and their foreign policy, not such as the groups that you stand up and fight for the rights of civilians that are being hurt. Just, you know, common sense. Now, is the other United Nations Human Rights Council resolutions in the past also were opposed as absurd by Israel. They included an endorsement of the right of Palestinian self-determination. Oh, how terrible. And criticism of Israeli abuses in the occupied territories. How dare they be held accountable for their crimes. And one of the one about the illegality of Israeli settlements. You know, settlements. It's just more occupying other people's territory is what that means. Of course, all of these are absurd and terrible and bigoted because they're trying to hold them accountable for their crimes. And of course, the newest report was instantly denounced as biased and anti-Semitic by Israel and its closest allies, because we know today that it's anti-Semitic to call out their crimes. That's just the way it is now. However, despite the slanderous comments against the United Nations by Israel, the report may now be taken to the International Criminal Court. The report calls for international arrest warrants to be handed out to the Israeli soldiers responsible, as well, and this is important, as individual sanctions to be applied to those guilty for the illegal use of lethal force against unarmed demonstrators, which could apply to people in charge. Now, we have to also point out they've already, this is largely why I would argue, they've already preemptively attacked the International Criminal Court and said, you can't come after the United States or Israel. Remember, not for unjust crimes, you just simply can't come after them. They murder somebody, sorry, you can't do it. The U.S. says you can't. Or they're going to attack you personally, which is unbelievably authoritarian and the opposite of what they pretend to be. But this is still, nonetheless, being asked to be sent to them. So this is the rest of the world standing up against the United States and Israel on this stance, which is very important. Now, to make the point further, just one day, as Inglis points out in his article, after the United Nations resolution, Inglis reports Israeli forces had killed two more unarmed protesters in Gaza. And I just reported on a few others that were recently protesting the unlawful shooting of other people and got shot for doing so. This stuff happens every single day, as I point out. This is nothing new. And this is why it's finally about time the United Nations did something about it. And I still argue that we're likely going to see this shut down because the United Nations is controlled largely by the United States and Israel. Doesn't mean they're utterly in control of it, but they have an overwhelming control over it, largely, most of the time, usually due to their veto power. Except in this case, they don't have it in regard to the United Nations Human Rights Council. Now, aside from the ongoing ethnic cleansing and state-sanctioned violence that has taken far too many innocent lives, average Palestinians endure oppression, unjust prosecution, and tyranny on a daily basis. And here's just yet another example from just yesterday, as they pretend this is absurd and anti-Semitic. How dare you call out our crimes? Here's a video of Israeli troops arresting a 10-year-old at a Palestinian elementary school. Every day this happens, without fail. Now, though the age of culpability is actually 12 years old by law, of course, because they don't follow even their own laws, the soldiers went into the school, child's school, the elementary school, and arrested him while carrying machine guns. Israeli forces arrested this 10-year-old boy from his classroom and actually beat the deputy head of the school in the West Bank on Wednesday for allegedly throwing stones. The story itself is very, very difficult to watch. Understand these people are forcing their way into an elementary school, forcing their way into a child's school, physically accosting him, physically accosting the teacher at the school, and then dragging the kid away for apparently throwing rocks. That's the claim. And of course, even their own law says that he has to be 12 for that to even matter. I mean, this is a regular occurrence. Now, Israeli soldiers arrested this fourth grader. It's Yabar school in this neighborhood adjacent to a mosque in the city of Hebron. Now, because, again, the age of culpability is 12 under both Israeli civilian and military law, according to activists and legal experts, it's clear that they exceeded their authority. Now, sources said the civil affairs called on the Israeli side to open an investigation into the incident. And of course, not to repeat the obviously outrageous act of Israeli soldiers storming into this elementary school, arresting a child and attacking his teachers. Now, in other documented incidents over the years, Israeli soldiers have arrested and detained Palestinian children as young as 7 years old, particularly in Hebron, where hundreds of Israeli soldiers are permanently stationed alongside hundreds of Jewish settlers and tens of thousands of Palestinians. Now, while Jewish settlers, of course, legal occupiers in the city, are subject to Israeli civilian law, Palestinians living in occupied Palestine, what they would call Israel, and they claim they all have the same rights, in this same area are subject to military law and can be arrested by Israeli troops at any time with no justification. This is the difference that they don't want you to look at. Average Israeli civilians that are occupying their territory, right, these settlements as they push them out of their own land, the civilian laws apply to them, but these people are under military law. How do they claim that that makes this all normal and fair to everybody else? Netanyahu himself has already said, no, this is the state for only Jewish people. We need to begin to recognize the inherently racist and apartheid nature of what they're doing here. Now, just last year, Palestinian-based human rights groups had reported that there are currently, right now, 270 Palestinian children prisoners being held in Israeli prisons right now. 270 children for what, throwing rocks, being held in prison without the consent of their parents, or rather even the involvement of their parents in most cases. At least 50 of them are under 16 years old. According to local sources, the civil affairs of the Palestinian military liaison have intervened with this one child, and he has since been released. But that rarely is the case, as we can see from the 270 children that are currently in jail. I think they get this, you know, their actions with impunity, they're so used to it that they storm in, regardless of how young this kid is, and take him anyway. But because people are beginning to draw attention to these things, maybe that's why he was released. Who ultimately knows? But the reality is, this is what's going on the ground. While they can pretend it's absurd that we should call them out for their crimes that are happening on a regular basis, hopefully people can begin to see what's really going on. Now, thinking about this in regard to the United States, as we continue to point out how much has been done for almost entirely for a foreign nation, and it's not Russia, for Israel, both our Congress, our executive branch, it's unbelievable. Almost nothing for American people and almost entirely for Israel. We now have yet another bill. While we're all criticizing how ridiculous it is that the 116th Congress has passed bill after bill or proposed bill after bill that's almost entirely pro or, you know, about Israel, we now have yet another bill. And guess what? It's a bill that was previously shot down last time and they're now forcing through again. This is coming from Mint Press News. And this is, I just can't believe it. Continually baffles me that this stuff continues to pop up and how in your face it is. They almost just don't care, I would say. Entitled, New Bill Would See U.S. Taxpayers, that's important, subsidize experimental Israeli laser weapons. Because that seems to, that's what all Americans care about. I woke up today and every American was screaming about how we need to subsidize experimental laser weapons for Israel. That's what every American cares about, clearly. Clearly, our Congress is all about their constituency. You know, the American people. The people that supposedly they work for. Obviously, I'm being facetious. This is unbelievable. Again, this is happening. Now, Representative Ted Lieu from California, a Democrat, and Elise Stefanik, a Republican, so again, it always goes both ways, from New York, introduced the, quote, U.S.-Israel Directed Energy Cooperation Act. Now, if you sounds familiar, yes, we've reported on this before. This was a bill they tried to pass in the 115th Congress, and it failed. And right off the bat, they're shoving this one right back at us. This would authorize, quote, the Department of Defense to carry out bilateral cooperation with Israel to develop directed energy capabilities. Funny enough how when we were talking about fires and other things, which even the mention of the word direct energy weapon were laughed out as conspiracy theorists. But now all of a sudden we're researching the technology that's been around for a very long time. Part of this was to make it seem like this is some kind of new venture that we're just discovering, even though we have Fox News reports from years ago showing them shooting direct energy weapons and burning holes through cars. Yeah, that's all a conspiracy. The reality is it's been around for a long time. And it's obvious now how aggressively they tried to make us feel crazy for talking about such a thing. It shows you that there's more to that story than they want us to believe, but that's a whole other topic. Now, direct energy weapons include laser weapons and particle beams. They're highly destructive, but embraced by militaries for their infinite magazines, as it were, not being able to run out, essentially, and of course, incredible speed and range, ultimately boiling down to being able to kill people better. Great. Now, more specifically, the bill, which is identical, as I said, to the bill of the same name that Lieu and Stefanik specifically themselves introduced last year, now they're introducing again, because they care about the American people. Of course, but it failed to pass back then. This would allow the Pentagon to, quote, carry out research, development, test, and evaluation activities on a joint basis with Israel to establish directed energy capabilities that address threats to the United States, deployed forces of the United States or Israel, and for other purposes. Well, at that point, it seems like it makes sense. Everybody's jointly working together. It's good for the United States. It's good for Israel. Of course, that's what they want you to read it as. But of course, as you read further, you find out that this is an incredibly one-sided bill. First of all, here's the bill from last year. In case you weren't sure, yes, this is something we previously talked about, and it didn't pass. But it was proposed, and now at a time when Americans couldn't need more things, this is what they're putting forward. So yet again, we have a bill that was designed to use the U.S. political system to benefit a foreign nation. And it fails to pass. And just months into the 116th Congress, it's already being forced in again. Arguably most troubling is the fact that this bill would deepen Israel's access to grotesque weapons of war that have been developed by the U.S. military, but have also been banned for the use by American troops. That's probably surprising to some, or maybe not. For instance, in the late 1990s, the U.S. and Israel collaborated on the Nautilus program that created lasers that caused permanent blindness in those targeted by literally melting the eyeball. This is in the 90s, ladies and gentlemen. You can only imagine what they have now that they're not telling you about. But of course, this is something the U.S. troops said, oh, well, that's too bad for us. Let's give it to Israel. So the Nautilus lasers were banned for use by U.S. troops under the Clinton administration because they could cause permanent blindness, but they were nevertheless shared with Israel's government. Here, go ahead and use it on Palestinians because we don't care. In light of this current bill, it's important specifically to revisit the Nautilus example, as it clearly shows that the U.S. government, in past collaborative efforts, has provided experimental, high-tech weapons to Israel, even when they are so controversial, potent, and deadly that the U.S.'s own military is banned from using them. How is that not absurdly ridiculous on its face? And show you that they don't care that Israel violates international law and breaks the rule. They don't care. This point is even more troubling when one considers that Israel regularly tests its experimental weapons and newly developed weapons on Palestinians, including civilians who live in the blockaded Gaza Strip and, of course, the occupied West Bank.
You see, on top of being occupied, colonized territory, Palestine is Israel's personal laboratory for testing, refining, and showcasing methods and weapons of domination and control. Easy access to a captive and disenfranchised Palestinian population to experiment on has given rise to a booming homeland security industry in Israel that repackages occupation-style repression for use on marginalized populations in other parts of the world. It allows Israeli arms producers to market their products as battle-tested and combat-proven, coveted labels that give Israel a competitive edge in the international arms trade. This has been especially lucrative for Israel in the post-9/11 era. Israeli arms sales have risen from $2 billion annually in 2002 to over $9 billion in 2017. The most extreme version of the laboratory dynamic is the Gaza Strip, which functions as an open-air testing ground for weapons of mass destruction. Gaza is home to nearly 2 million Palestinians, many of them refugees and the descendants of refugees who were forced out of their homes in 1948. Gaza is basically an open-air prison surrounded by an air, sea, and land blockade. This makes it a convenient laboratory for Israel's most destructive weapons. In the summer of 2014, Israel launched a brutal 51-day bombing campaign in Gaza that killed over 2,000 Palestinians, including more than 500 children. Less than a month after the massacre, Israel held its annual drone expo featuring many systems that had been used for the first time during the 2014 Gaza onslaught.
This was used with our systems. That video was taken by this system right here. So it works. Yeah. It's our system has been proven. We call it battlefield proven.
Now, while it has been touted as a means of jointly researching direct energy weapons, this new bill that our U.S. Congress is putting forward in favor of Israel, it's touted as a jointly researching effort, the text of the bill reveals that it would be used to funnel specifically U.S. taxpayer funds to subsidize Israeli directed energy weapon research in Israel. So not only is it really not beneficial for Americans, it's basically a bill that's making American people pay for their efforts to fund research for their direct energy weapons in Israel. Why is that something U.S. congressmen are making a focus? It's a good question to ask yourself. For instance, the bill states, quote, "The Secretary of Defense is authorized to provide maintenance and sustainment support to Israel for the direct energy capabilities research, development, test, and evaluation activities authorized." It then states that Israel's financial contribution to this research would, you know, not necessarily need to be equal to the United States contribution, but merely, quote, "an amount that otherwise meets the best efforts of Israel, as mutually agreed to by the United States and Israel." The best efforts. So this month, sorry, we can't put up any money, but we're trying. So the U.S. funds everything else. Basically, this puts the guarantee on the side of the U.S. taxpayer to fund this, and Israel just kind of does what it can when it can. That's great. Great to see that we're funding their projects. Thanks, Congress. And furthermore, it states, quote, "The memorandum of agreement between the two countries states that the bill would require, quote, the United States government to receive semi-annual reports on expenditure of funds, if any, by the government of Israel, including a description of what the funds have been used for, when funds were expended, and an identification of entities that expended the funds. This passage strongly suggests that the research will take place in Israel, under Israeli government supervision, despite the fact it's being largely funded by U.S. taxpayers. Now, this current bill appears not to provide any direct benefit whatsoever, you know, to the United States, and instead promises to be a way of subsidizing high-tech weapons research and an allied government that regularly commits massive war crimes, as the United Nations literally just adopted a resolution saying they've committed war crimes. And the U.S. is still Israel-focused on all of its legislation, passing bills that focus and that you literally take money from taxpayers in America to fund research in Israel. I mean, we need to finally begin to see what's happening right in front of us, people. Now, though Representative Liu, who's one of the main people behind this bill, has claimed that the legislation is an opportunity for the United States and, of course, would save lives, it seems that the, you know, $31,850 that Liu received from the pro-Israel lobby just last year may have swayed his opinion just a little bit. But I guess saying as much today is now anti-Semitic by the new U.S. definition, so I apologize. Of course, everybody else included in this, I don't really apologize, everybody else included in this is also largely connected to these kind of groups. Not a big surprise. Now, this bill is a perfect example of yet another Israel-first bill now making its way through the U.S. Congress. And again, as I said before, as I just pointed out, just making sure Bob says, don't forget to list the bill so that people can challenge it. Yeah, no, I definitely have. The name is out there. The direct the bill I have linked in there is the last one. It hasn't even been posted yet, but I will. Something we should be always challenging for sure. But as I just pointed out, that Israeli officials first spoke out about how they were predicting Trump would declare the Golan Heights Israeli territory, you know, within a week, despite it being an illegal occupation under international law, and despite Trump not even having the authority to make such declaration. And then Trump dutifully, within hours, hopped onto social media to make their prediction come true. Well, now we have a member of the Israeli Knesset party calling for Trump to recognize Israel's annexation of the West Bank in the same illegitimate way he recognized Israel's claim to Syria's land or declared Jerusalem the capital of Israel, something he literally is not able to do, but does anyway. So now should we assume that he will jump to attention the same way? Or maybe do his orders need to come directly from Netanyahu himself? I don't know. Maybe that's something we need to consider. Clearly, they must have been psychic, clearly, to know about the Golan Heights Declaration, because we know now, thanks to social programming, that it's anti-Semitic to suggest that Israeli officials knew ahead of time that he would make the declaration, you know, because they paid for it via lobbying groups. But you must be racist if you think something is logically sound and obviously correct as that. That's just my opinion. But for the final story of the day, something that shows you how aggressively all of this stuff is being hid from you and obfuscated and outright lied about by the mainstream media and how that control is even possible. This coming from Mint Press News, bad news for the news. The Fox-Disney merger again shortens the media menu. Now, we've been talking about this for a long time. This has been a long time coming. It's been six companies in the United States that control over 90% of what you see, listen to, talk about, everything in media. And I've been saying it's five groups now. This has been coming. And now it's officially five groups that basically control everything. The sliver of the group they don't control are considered inconsequential to how much they can control and what they can show you and tell you and manipulate. This is something most of us are largely already aware of. Now, the long-rumored Fox-Disney merger was actually made official just on Wednesday. Disney closed on its purchase of much of Rupert Murdoch's media empire. But as the article points out, it doesn't mean Rupert Murdoch is going anywhere. He still controls Fox and Wall Street Journal, all the groups that he has control of. So he just sold a large part of this, giving them a lot of control, but maintained his corner of his control. But the $73.1 billion merger, they're saying is more accurately described as an acquisition, continues a worrying trend of media consolidation, as we continue to try to warn you about, and gives Disney control and ownership over a historic 35-40% of the entire movie market. Almost half of everything you see in the movies comes from this group. Think about that kind of control. We just talked about recently about how the Pentagon has been verifiably involved in hundreds of movies Some they don't even tell you about. There's a reason for that. Now, as of this week, it now owns the 20th Century Fox Film, Disney, the merger, because of the merger. It owns 20th Century Fox Film, it owns TV studios, it owns Fox Television Group, countless international broadcasters, including the Star India conglomerate, and a controlling stake in streaming service Hulu. I mean, this is crazy control. In 1983, as the article points out, in a book called The Media Monopoly, it warned that only 50 giant firms at the time dominated almost the entire media landscape, and claiming this was horrifying at the time, 50, giving them enormous power, they say, to, quote, set the national agenda. Interesting how that's literally what we're seeing today. Now, the author warned of the collective power of these firms, the 50 at the time, with their numerous interlocking corporate interests and possessions, along with unified cultural and political values, concluding that the media has the power to effectively decide, quote, what is true and what is false, what is reality and what is fantasy, what is important and what is trivial, and that, quote, there's no greater force in shaping the public mind than these media conglomerates. Now, the reality is today, because of the internet and independent media, that we're stealing that away from them. We have, effectively. We have effectively been able to influence the narrative, and that scares the crap out of them. That's why they're trying to consolidate more. That's why they're trying to consolidate more control over everything. That's why they're trying to shut us down, because we're getting through to people. As they've always said, more censorship comes when they begin to lose control. Now today, just five massive corporations, General Electric, News Corp, which is owned by Murdoch, Disney, National Amusements, and Time Warner, control over 90% of what Americans see, read, or hear. These massive corporations long ago became large enough to directly lobby and control the U.S. government to pass laws aiding their expansion and profit, such as the 1996 Telecommunications Act, which removed virtually all impediments to their growth. Now, the reality of their involvement with the government, this is where we touch on the idea of fascism, where we're literally blurring the line between government control and corporate control. This is what we're talking about. These people are massively powerful and can actually buy law. Exactly like we're talking about with the Princeton study we recently showed about how we're an oligarchy, which regardless of what the voters actually care about, it's the power and the money that actually makes the call. And these people are so powerful that they can, we're talking about AIPAC in the same way. Using their power and their money to influence the direction of this country. It is so far removed from voting and American input. We need to begin to see that. Now, this is the middle rung of what we recently showed you as the media multiplier, if you remember that previous show that we talked about. Here's the image. The middle rung being all of those, you know, Fox, New York Times, all of the different groups in the middle there. Now, you can very clearly show that these massive corporations have ties to every level of this, including the intelligence, the Pentagon, the CIA, the White House, absolutely, including the real news, Associated Press, the French news agency, and Reuters, which is where, as I showed you at the time, in case you didn't know, is the only main three locations that all of the news gets their information from, the same place you could, and then they take that information, they bend it and manipulate it how they see fit, or just blindly regurgitate what they're told. That's the news for you. That's their sources that they don't tell you about. But the reality is that only five companies now own every single media group in between you and where this news is coming from. I mean, really think about that kind of control. These behemoths can crowd out independent challengers and heavily promote their own ventures through corporate synergies, which is basically exactly what we're seeing in social media today. Same thing. Control. The corporate-dominated media environment leads to a unanimity of outlook and a narrowing of political perspective available to citizens from mainstream media, limited to corporate and advertiser-friendly content and viewpoints. A case in point is the Sinclair fake news montage, a threat to our democracy that we've all seen, which reveals the disingenuous nature and orchestrated talking points that, of course, they pass off as honest personal opinion. They want you to think that. They desperately need you to blindly trust. They need you to ignore that voice in the back of your head that says, something doesn't add up here. They need you to not only no longer think for yourself, but give yourself over to the collective groupthink mentality and just stop asking questions. They desperately need this because a well-informed, critically thinking electorate or actually more appropriately, a well-informed, critically thinking population, outside of the idea of voting, in general, is the biggest threat to their control structure that keeps you disassociated with the truth, if you're part of it. Part of their control structure, I mean. And of course, is the surest way to strike a path through all the propaganda toward actual liberty and self-determination. Don't be fooled by their false sense of sincerity. It's all part of the mirage. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
Hi, I'm Fox San Antonio's Jessica Headley.
And I'm Ryan Wolf.
Our greatest responsibility is to serve our Treasure Valley communities.
The El Paso, Las Cruces communities.
Eastern Iowa communities.
Mid-Michigan communities.
We are extremely proud of the quality, balanced journalism that CBS 4 News produces.
But we are concerned about troublemaking and irresponsible, one-sided news stories plaguing our country.
The sharing of biased and false news has become all too common on social media. More alarming, some media outlets publish these same fake stories without checking facts first.
The sharing of biased and false
news has become all too common on social media.
Unfortunately, some members of the media use their platforms to push their own personal bias and agenda to control exactly what people think.
And this is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.